This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's Wibro World. We're about to speak to Tom Jasny, who's the Vice President for Wireless Systems and Broadband at Samsung Telecommunications America. Welcome to Wibro World.
Thank you much.
What's your position at Samsung Telecommunications America, and what are your responsibilities in that position?
I'm Vice President, Wireless and Broadband Network Systems. And I have responsibility for our wireless infrastructure and broadband infrastructure offerings here in North America.
Okay, and where does Samsung Telecommunications America fit into the Samsung organization?
Samsung Group is headquartered in Korea. We've got extensive operations in Korea that include finance, insurance, construction, shipbuilding, other activities. We're part of Samsung Electronics Corporation, which is a $55 billion sales organization. Samsung Telecommunications America is a subsidiary of Samsung Electronics. And out of Samsung Electronics, approximately a third of the total business is telecom.
Okay. I was looking at a press release. It said it did $55 billion worth of business last year and made about $10 billion?
That's correct. Very profitable.
That's a pretty good ratio. What role, if any, can you tell us about, does the South Korean government play in fostering the development of Wibro and so far and in the future?
The South Korean government has traditionally had an influence in helping to manage cooperation and competition in the wireless field there. In the case of Wibro, they did make spectrum available. Originally, three swaths of spectrum were made available to KT, SKT, and Hanaro Telecom. Hanaro, which did not have wireless as part of its core business, elected to return their spectrum, and it's still available for an operator in the market.
Okay, and how does Samsung's activities building wireless infrastructure relate to its role as a seller of digital telecommunications devices for end users?
So the Samsung Electronics organization consists of a number of things, partly core components, including chipsets, screens which go into many of our devices, white goods, and telecom infrastructure and telecom CPE. So they're all part of our product line.
Okay. So obviously the creation of an infrastructure that uses the Wibro technology will make it more possible to sell more devices that use it.
That would be correct.
Okay. Could you start our discussion of Wibro by clarifying the relationship and distinctions between and among WiMAX, IEEE 802.16e, mobile broadband, and Wibro?
Wibro is anticipated and designed to be a subset of the 802.16e standard,
okay,
which we expect to be ratified hopefully before the end of this year. The intent of Wibro was to be fully compliant. It will have a few differences from mobile WiMAX as we expect mobile WiMAX to be adopted in the United States. A couple of things worth pointing out. The Korean government did help establish some minimum requirements for Wibro. So, for example, maximum and minimum throughputs were designed into the Wibro standard. Those may be slightly different in North America. The channelization will be close but slightly different between Korea and North America, and the mobility requirement will be relaxed somewhat in Korea compared to what we expect in North America.
Now, and so are WiMAX and Wibro going to be like Beta and VHS and Blu-ray and HD DVD, or are they going to be always compatible so that WiMAX transmitters will work on Wibro receivers and so on?
I would view them primarily as an implementation of the same standard at perhaps different frequencies. And in Korea, for example, Wibro will operate at 2.3 gigahertz.
Right.
We expect adoption in North America to include 2.3 gigahertz, 2.5 gigahertz, perhaps eventually some other frequencies. And we do see some demand for 3.5 gigahertz in some international markets.
So is that going to mean that WiMAX installations will be competitive with or complementary to Wibro installations?
It could be either situation.
Okay. Does Samsung have a relation with Intel, which is pushing a WiMAX to cooperate or use what they're doing as part of what you're doing, or is it competition?
We have collaborated very heavily in the standards bodies. I believe if you took a random survey, most people would say that Samsung and Intel have been the two leaders in the development of the 802.16e standard.
Right.
I would emphasize that while it's not a direct competition, Samsung has consistently promoted a mobile WiMAX offering. Intel has focused a bit more on fixed applications for WiMAX.
Okay. Explain as concisely and simply, but no more simply than necessary, how WiBro works in terms of its physics, the frequencies it works on, and the characteristics, and how the signals are propagated and so on.
I'm probably not the best person to give you a technical description
All right.
of WiBro.
Give us a non-technical description of how it works.
It very simply will involve radios that radiate at 2.3 gigahertz.
Right.
And those will connect with another radio device, whether in a laptop computer, a mobile handset, or a fixed or nomadic device, much as the cellular network operates today.
So it's really like Wi-Fi on steroids, in a way, in terms of its architecture.
It is very similar to a cellular or a PCS network.
Right.
In the way it operates.
Right.
It will, however, offer significantly greater bandwidth than traditional cellular and PCS networks.
Okay. Tell our listeners what MIMO is and what role, if any, it plays in WiBro.
So MIMO, in principle, is multiple inputs, multiple outputs. The idea there is to use, for example, multiple antennas in a handset or multiple antennas in a radiating cell site in order to increase or manage capacity and propagation within the network. And we do see MIMO being, and smart antenna technologies in general, being implemented effectively in mobile WiMAX.
So this uses both multiple antennas on the physical side and fancy algorithms to receive and transmit the signals in ways that are more efficient than single antenna systems.
Correct. And the objective, again, is to increase both capacity and coverage in a given area of the network.
Okay. What is OFDMA, orthogonal frequency division multiple access time division duplex technology, and how does that all work together and complement the MIMO and complement the frequency in which this is operating?
So OFDM and TDD will both be used in mobile WiMAX partly to achieve increased throughput and with TDD to allow for simultaneous exchange of uplink and downlink information so that we don't have one-way path that is limiting transmission and receipt of signal.
Okay. Now, what can you say in terms of line of sight, how this all works? Do these WiBro signals bounce around things in ways that make them receivable, or does that affect the throughput of the system in any way, depending on whether you're behind a bush or inside a building? Or
And again, similar to a cellular or PCS network, it will be a technology that does not require line of sight.
Okay. And it does, and it avoids that problem essentially by ricocheting around whatever is around and then being recollected?
Correct. You will get some multipath and reflection effect. It is not like some satellite technologies that require line of sight.
Okay. How does 802.16e differ from 802.16d? And how do they both differ from 802.11, the Wi-Fi?
So 802.11 is what most people are familiar with as Wi-Fi. It is intended for use in unlicensed rather than licensed spectrum. It is typically used for only hotspot applications, so much more narrow cell radius. Part of the idea of WiBro and mobile WiMAX is to operate in regulated spectrum so that there will be no interference issues compared to some technologies, including Wi-Fi. 802.16d will regulate more fixed applications. 802.16e is intended to include mobility, whether it's pedestrian mobility, portable mobility, or full vehicular mobility.
Okay. Before we get on to the mobility question, talk a little bit about the regulated versus non-regulated issue. Essentially, that means that this spectrum, only one carrier can use it, and they have to presumably pay the licensing government authority to do so, but the advantage is that there won't be interference from alternative carriers. Is that the story there?
I think that's the idea, and of course, the regulatory frontier will be a little different depending on the country. In some cases, there presumably will be payment, and not necessarily in all cases will there be a required payment.
Because you said the Korean government provided spectrum space for this so far.
That is my understanding, and I'm honestly not sure, Mark, if there is a fee associated in any way with use of that spectrum.
Do you know whether this spectrum is already owned in the United States or whether it's going to be licensed, it's going to be auctioned off by the FCC or some in the near future?
2.3 and 2.5 frequencies are both owned and will be made available in additional auctions next year in the United States.
So does someone own them already, or the federal government still has them and they're going to do this fresh and people are going to bid on it?
Some of those frequencies are privately owned.
Already?
Correct.
And some of them aren't, I guess, right?
Believe that's the case.
Is this going to be a big stumbling block or problem or issue in the rollout of WIBRO in terms of who owns them and who's going to buy them and so on?
Around the world, there is certainly sufficient available and owned spectrum to create a global market. For a carrier who's interested in getting in the business, and again, this will depend on the country,
right,
if they don't have spectrum today, then that will be on the critical path to establishing a service. So they will either have to acquire or wait for auctions to acquire spectrum in some countries.
Is this something that Samsung is urging governments around the world to get involved in and get moving on?
We typically have not taken an activist role in or with regulatory bodies, but we're also convinced that there's sufficient spectrum at 2.3, 2.5, 3.5 gigahertz to create a global market already.
Okay. Now, you mentioned pedestrian and vehicular mobility.
Right.
This involves what's called handing off a WIBRO signal.
Correct.
Which is similar, presumably, the way it happens with cellular networks.
That's right.
What were the challenges there? What tests have been run? Obviously, a person walking is not going to... talk about the size of the base stations and the frequency with which they need to be placed, and then we'll have some idea about how frequently the handoff is going to have to take place.
Sure. We're still gathering empirical evidence on cell radius and network design.
Right.
And the reason is we've been going through demonstration and trial activity in Korea.
Right.
I would point out that at the end of August, Samsung demonstrated vehicular mobility at 60 kilometers with 2 meg throughput for voice calls and 20 meg throughput for data services. We're expecting that there will be a significant increase for fixed applications over mobile in some cases. And the reason is you'll get better propagation and a lot less complexity in the equipment for non-mobile applications. But we're also seeing cell radiuses of kilometers for full mobility applications as well.
Okay, to maybe move off to the side a little bit, is the architecture that WIBRO is going to use a mesh architecture or different than or non-mesh?
It's not a mesh architecture. It is a more traditional cellular architecture at this point.
So essentially, there's going to be the base station, and they're going to go to collection points.
Correct.
Okay.
So in devices to cell sites aggregated back to a core network.
Okay. And will that be? Will the aggregation use the same frequencies or other frequencies than the frequency used to deliver the signal to the end user?
Probably a combination of both with wireless backhaul, becoming more prevalent in future phases of WIBRO deployment.
Okay. Now, then talk about the challenge of, so a person with a PDA or a laptop sitting somewhere doesn't have any handoff issues, but if they're walking with their phone, then they have, you're saying that the cell radiuses that you're getting right now are about how big?
1 to several kilometers.
Okay,
depends a lot on the environment.
So it's not going to be a frequent thing for a person walking, but a person driving it is. And what are the challenges there, and how does WIBRO address them, and what kind of tests have you done so far to demonstrate how well it works?
So again, we have been doing some testing more on throughput, which has been very, very positive. We've done less testing on large networks simply because they haven't been built yet.
Right.
We will see in November at the APEC conference in Busan, Korea, KT, which is the primary wireline operator in Korea, will do a demonstration with up to 500 simultaneous users in covering for mobility applications covering the APEC conference site. There will be, I believe, 6,500 plus participants and a combination of mobile handsets and laptop cards that will be used by press and conference participants. So we'll get a lot more information out of that kind of trial. Samsung is a supplier in support of that demonstration, but it will be KT actually doing the event.
Okay. What kind of speeds up and down have been achieved so far, and what are the ultimate expectations in terms of that?
So in the case of WIBRO, the Korean government, I believe, has set maximum limits of 3 meg down and 1 meg up, with minimum throughput of 512 down and 128 up. And all of the test results have been consistent with those parameters to date.
So this easily qualifies to be called broadband.
Correct.
Okay.
And I think the expectation mark is something like 1 meg average throughput per user on the downlink.
Okay. How does quality of service QoS come into this?
I really don't have a lot of information on QoS or test results at this point.
Okay, what about IMS, IP-based multimedia subsystems? Mm-hmm. How is that involved with WIBRO?
So we see IMS as a key technology in fixed mobile convergence.
Say a little bit more about what it is exactly.
Okay, IMS is the ability to use IP for transport and access efficiency, so significantly reduced cost for the service provider, which should translate into more cost-effective service for the subscriber and consumer group.
This figures into what's called essentially in the landline or cable world a triple play, isn't it?
Absolutely. What it will enable is the use of IP efficiencies on the cost structure, the introduction of soft switches and application servers for rapid deployment of very cost-effective services. Samsung's view is those app servers line up very nicely with our end-user devices so that we can deploy a core that relies on IP transport, application servers that promote a great revenue model for the service provider, a set of devices on the edge that really provide a lot of freedom and flexibility to subscribers, and WiMAX is simply going to be an access technology that offers more bandwidth with mobility to enable some of those services.
Okay, and again, those basic services are data transfer, voice over IP, and video.
Exactly.
Okay.
So we'll have a full range of services from voice, text, image, to video.
All right. In the most efficient packaging possible.
Correct.
Okay. Speak a little bit more about the applications that this will enable, and where you see the use of this system and what people are going to use it for going forward.
So the intent in talking to some of the planners in Korea is a full range of services, emergency and safety services, for example, voice services, data services, multimedia messaging, location-based services. One of the interesting things that KT will be doing at the APEC conference is personal broadcasting. So the press there will be able to file live stories, including text and image and perhaps video as well, depending on the article, while they're at the conference.
So essentially they'd be able to have a webcam attached to their laptop and broadcast through that network back into the web.
That is the idea, and I'm honestly not positive what all will be enabled, but I know the intent is to include personal broadcasting in November.
Okay, and as I was trying to envision some of the uses here, especially for mobile applications, I saw the idea of streaming real-time video to the backseat of SUVs.
Right.
Is that part of the game plan?
Eventually, absolutely so. Samsung is working today with DMB in Korea, so we are delivering satellite broadcast in moving vehicles. Mobile WiMAX enables that sort of capability as well.
I've done several interviews with people in the digital cinema sector. Is this going to be a viable method of transmitting digital cinema content to theaters? And of course, if it can do that, it could do it to individual homes as well.
No reason not to, and some of the interesting aspects are home networking and possibilities of merging all services, whether at an office or a home location.
So really the promise of this is that a person signs up with their carrier and they have their Wibro service and they can use it in their home, throughout their home, on the way to work, at work, traveling around, or anywhere.
I believe you summarized the concept very nicely there.
Okay. What about the cost? Are there some estimates about what it's going to cost to install all this, and then what that's going to mean on a monthly basis for the person who's taking advantage of the service the way I just outlined it?
The service offering obviously will be in the hands of the service provider, and it will be heavily dependent on the type of services that are offered. The cost structure fundamentally is not order of magnitude different than what we've seen in the wireless cellular and PCS world.
So we could say $40 to $60 a month could get this
possibly.
For you.
Possibly, and I do believe there have been some plans in Korea that are even below that level, but I can't tell you exactly which services are envisioned to be included in that price point.
Okay. The news story that got me started on this, before which I didn't know that there was such a thing as Wibro, was an announcement that Samsung is working with Sprint/Nextel to do a test here. What were the origins of that agreement, and what does it involve, and what kind of test is going to be happening when and where?
Sprint is obviously evaluating future technology platforms. They've been very aggressive in rolling out CDMA and CDMA-related technologies. I believe Sprint views the promise of mobile WiMAX as offering full mobility with increased bandwidth and with a wide array of consumer devices. Because the real key for Sprint or any other service provider is to offer more bandwidth with full mobility with a quality user experience that can only be delivered through a range of user devices.
Right.
What we'll be doing with Sprint beginning in fourth quarter of this year is evaluating Wibro and mobile WiMAX technologies, and I believe what they're interested in seeing are the things we've been talking about. What sort of throughput and performance and quality of service are we going to realize on this kind of system? How can we model the economics of investment? How can we design a network for significant service delivery? When will devices be available? At what price points? How can we make money in this business? What they're really after, I think, is the best user experience and the best delivery of value to their subscriber base.
Okay, and what's the time frame for the trial?
We'll begin work in fourth quarter of this year and work through at least a portion of the first half next year. This technology should be available for commercial deployment as early as the second half of next year in North America. It will be launched. Wibro will be launched in Korea, first by KT in April of next year, and then by SKT in the June timeframe. So part of what Sprint will benefit from is the rollout experience from carriers in Korea. One of their interests in Samsung, obviously, is our early experience with the carriers in Korea. The fact that we have a foundation in the technology, we'll be developing deployment experience between now and the launch in the first half of next year. So we'll be in a better position to support them as a partner should they elect to implement this technology next year.
Okay, now how much of a breakthrough is this economically, commercially, and even culturally that a Korean standard is being considered as a standard for North America?
So let me emphasize again, the view is 802.16e is the international standard.
Right.
It will be implemented at different frequencies depending on the market. WIBRO is an early implementation at frequencies made available in Korea, 2.3 gigahertz. 2.3 won't be universally adopted. 2.5 may, in fact, be a more popular frequency in North America.
Okay. What about EVDO? How does that compare to WIBRO technically and in terms of its commercial availability? And is there likely to be a kind of sprint with WIBRO versus Verizon with EVDO competition here?
Well, the two are not incompatible. EVDO will offer increased data throughput rates compared to 1X, but substantially less than mobile WiMAX. And again, this will partly be a function of how densely networks are built and whether they're used for voice data or a full range of services.
Right, but the overall IP throughput on WIBRO mobile WiMAX is greater than what's available with EVDO. Is that
Significantly
right?
Significantly greater than what's available with EVDO. Or EVDOA. Now, what I think we'll see developing is, whether we're talking about a Korean carrier or a North American carrier, there will still be value in traditional 2G and 3G services. Even if they're somewhat limited on data throughput, they'll have value for voice services and for ubiquity and coverage. So I think we'll see a deployment of mobile WiMAX similar to what we saw in the early days of PCS. Purely driven by business and economics, people will focus on population density and the best demographics in order to get a return on the investment. So I think we'll see compatibility for some time to come between 2G and 3G networks and mobile WiMAX. One of the unique things about Samsung is our tradition of working with multi-mode, multi-band consumer devices, so we can bring those two together. And for example, in Korea, you'll see SKT relying on the dual-mode handset to bridge their CDMA network with their mobile WiMAX network.
And so would that mean that people would be able to use the same device for EVDO or for WIBRO?
That's the idea, correct.
Okay. Compare this a little bit with broadcast television in terms of its possible ubiquity and becoming a sort of default infrastructure for the distribution of information.
Well, broadcast in concept is one to many. It's much more of a push technology. Part of the idea of mobile WiMAX is increased personalization and the idea that you can control access to content, storage, and view of content. So it's the opportunity to deliver much more personal services. And I don't think we'll eliminate broadcast technologies, but they are a bit of a legacy when the capital investment was highly centralized and access was highly generalized. We're moving to a model, I think, where there's much more control at the edge of the network. Again, through these devices, through home networking, home storage, office capability, and personal capability to access and control content on an immediate and personal level.
So in fact, it's almost analogous, or maybe even almost completely analogous, to the fact that in the early 50s there were 12 computers in the world and you had to be a huge institution to own one.
And we've gone to PCs and then to laptops and now to phones that are capable of more than those old mainframes.
Right. And so essentially this does for the broadcast of voice and video and data the same thing, so that essentially instead of having a few centralized propagators of this information, there's the possibility of millions.
You're absolutely right.
Who's going to be carrying this out? Will it be the big telecom companies solely? Or what about municipal wireless? Philadelphia and other cities have been moving forward with plans for municipally owned wireless networks to to compete with incumbent telcos and cable companies. Is WIBRO a technology that could be profitably or efficiently adopted by municipalities who want to provide a broadband service to their residents, either by themselves or in a public-private partnership?
The answer is it absolutely could be adopted on a very local level, a regional level, or a national level. We're not sure yet who the winners will be. I expect we'll see a combination of traditional service providers and probably some new entrants. Some of the build-out of WIBRO and Mobile WiMAX in North America will probably include a combination of national services, hot zone services, and hot spot services. So, for example, I think that you would find airports and campus and downtown financial districts to be very attractive as early build opportunities. You'll find certain neighborhoods to be very desirable. Rural properties will take more time to develop.
And in fact, does one have to be a sprinter of Verizon to do this, or could the business council of downtown City X decide that it wants to install this?
Anyone with access to the appropriate spectrum could, in theory, offer the service.
Okay. Why don't you wrap up by expressing any personal excitement you feel about the WIBRO technology and what you see as the rollout strategy and met expectations in the next year or so.
So you've caught this story pretty early. As I said earlier, we're in the process of trialing the technology now. We'll see the first commercial deployments in the first half of next year in Korea. Part of what's exciting about this is we've seen the demand for mobile services. That will continue unabated. What really is exciting about Mobile WiMAX is the increased bandwidth and the opportunity that brings for an increased range of services. The unique thing about Samsung is our ability to deliver the infrastructure and a range of devices, because in the end, this is really about consumers having access to better services anytime, anywhere. And we believe we can enable that from an end-to-end solution. Then it's largely up to the marriage of service providers and consumers to see what the adoption rate's going to be. What we know is there's sort of an unmet horizon for increased bandwidth, full mobility, and quality devices. That's what people are looking for. We see this working in any environment, though, at work, at home, in vehicles, on the street. So it's an opportunity for truly personalized services with more bandwidth than people have ever had access to.
Sounds like a good idea to me. Thanks very much for talking to us on Utopia Media's WIBRO World today.
You bet. Mark, have a great day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.